It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, so glad to have you with us over the noon hour on Iowa Public Radio's news service. The magnitude and severity of the event was simply put overwhelming, and it ranks as one of the greatest natural disasters ever to hit the United States, the Midwest flood of 1993. Perhaps the mere mention of it 20 years ago brings back to you an image or an experience that still makes you shake your head in disbelief. From May through September of 93, major and record flooding occurred across 9 Midwestern states. Hundreds of levees failed. Thousands of people were evacuated, some for months. The final toll, 50 flood deaths, damages of some $15 billion. I want to reach out to you this half hour and ask you, what is your most vivid memory if you experienced the flood of 93? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us with a few of their memories of this great flood, a number of people. Lester Graham is with us, joining us from Ann Arbor, Michigan Radio, in a studio there, investigative reporter with Michigan Radio. Lester Graham, hi.
Hi there.
Great to have you with us. Bill Stowe also with us in our Des Moines studio. He is currently the CEO and general manager of Des Moines Water Works. Bill, welcome to you.
Hi, Ben.
And our own Dean Borg is with us, also in our Des Moines studio, Iowa Public Radio correspondent. Hi, Dean.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon to you. I wonder if we can start with Bill Stowe there. In 1993, with a few of your memories, Bill, you worked for Iowa Power as a human resource manager at that time, I believe, right?
That's right, Ben. It was a fun time.
Now, during the Great Flood, downtown Des Moines had to be evacuated. Take us back and tell us why.
I'll be happy to. It's still very clear in my mind. I lived in downtown Des Moines and worked in downtown Des Moines at the time. And when the waters crested on the Des Moines and the Raccoon about the same time, they took out a number of substations, took out Des Moines Waterworks Fluor Drive plant. Now, 20 years later, I find myself responsible for Des Moines Waterworks, and it's kind of interesting to look back with a slightly different perspective on what happened then. But at the time, I was with Iowa Power, now MidAmerican Energy, through some buyouts. But essentially, electrical substations went underwater. Potable water through Des Moines Waterworks was lost. So fire protection systems, pretty important, obviously, in multi-level housing, went out. There was an evacuation order put out by Des Moines Police and Des Moines Fire, essentially saying that those buildings couldn't be inhabited. So you had a situation where it was just too dangerous for anyone to be in the downtown, not simply because of the surface water that was still all around many of the streets in downtown Des Moines as it came over the levee system, but even the protective systems that are necessary, the electrical and water systems that are necessary for us to stay in buildings weren't available for several weeks after. So it was an odd kind of circumstance. We'd actually look around downtown for several days after the flood crested and see ponded water in a number of different locations, but skyscrapers without people in them and police and fire kind of around the perimeter, making sure that anyone who came in had a specific need and equally were escorted out of there within a short period of time.
Now, Iowa Power, I understand, had to isolate Des Moines' entire electrical system.
They did, and I was a part of that process on the Des Moines River. There are a couple of large substations. River Hills Substation is kind of now in the Hy-Vee Hall area, if that helps you to kind of put a location on it. But electrical systems don't like water in any circumstance. But they particularly don't like water when they actually have electric current running through them when water is put over them. So the responsibility of a group that I had the pleasure of working with really was responsible for isolating those substations and later then pumping them out and working to restore power. But I actually watched the Des Moines skyline go black in quadrants as the power was switched out at the substation level and protective measures were were taken so that the period of time in which we were without water and power was shortened. But it was a pretty surreal event for those of us who were around in the downtown in particular.
I was the entire decade of the 90s, I was abroad. So, but in Europe where I was, it was making front page news. And by your description, Bill, it seems like you were in the middle of an apocalyptic movie.
You know, it had a feel of an apocalypse, but you knew, at least in the abstract, as we know now when we go through adversities in our own life, let alone our professional and community lives, that the apocalypse would end and there would be a better day. You find yourself, you know, pacing yourself emotionally and intellectually and physically. But even though you felt like you were in an apocalyptic circumstance, you knew it really wasn't an apocalypse in the sense it wasn't the end of the world.
Well, Ben, this is Dean Borg. I say, we can look forward to the sweet by and by, but that was the nasty now and now.
you're right about that, Dean. I say with the benefit of 20 years that we could see a bright sky out there, but at the time it was pretty nasty now and now, as you said.
Dean Borg, what is your memory of that time? What stands out?
Well, it was scary. And my most immediate first exposure, driving in from eastern Iowa where my residence is, I was coming in to tape an Iowa press program, and we were doing Senator Charles Grassley very early in the morning, so I came in the night before, and I stayed at a place called The Inn on Merle Hay Road. Bill Knapp, I think the Des Moines entrepreneur, owned that restaurant and the inn there on Merle Hay, just off I-35. And I checked in late evening, and about, let's say, 2 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang in the room. And it was somebody from the inn advising me, saying, "We're asking our guests to move their cars from the parking lot. The creek is rising rapidly." And so I got out there in my pajamas and put my shoes on and moved my car. And it was okay then, but I'm glad I did, because the next morning, those who either weren't contacted or didn't get their cars moved, there was water up to the windshield. A creek behind the inn had risen that rapidly overnight. So fast forward, we taped the program with Senator Grassley. I was low on gas. I intended to buy gas before I would get on the interstate there at Merle Hay and head back to eastern Iowa. So I was nearly out of gas. I came back to that very place. There's a Quick Trip there now on Merle Hay, just to kind of, those of you who know that area. I couldn't get on I-35 because they had the road blocked right there. There's a small bridge. There's just a tiny little sleepy little creek normally. And the road had been blocked because that creek was rising and the bridge was about to float away. And I couldn't get on. So I knew 86th Street. So I dashed around in Johnston, went over to 86th. That's blocked too. Mm. How am I going to get out of town? So an Army post, not an Army post, it's the road that goes in front of the National Guard headquarters there. I don't know what the road is. I met somebody there from Johnston. He was trying to do the same thing. He said, "I think we'll have to go north. Follow me." And so here I am, very low on gas, and he took me way north out into the Sailorville Reservoir area, out on gravel roads and everything else, and I'm watching that gas gauge way down on E. Finally, we came in on East 14th Street, and there it was gas there, and that's where, at the intersection of East 14th and I-80, I was able to fill up with gas and get out of the area. Well, I have other stories too, Ben, but I'll let you come
okay,
back.
Okay, maybe we'll have time to hopefully come back to Dean. I know you've got a number of remembrances, but let's get to Lester Graham, because you're now with Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor, but at the time of the flood, Lester, I understand you filed not only for Northern Public Radio in DeKalb, but also Illinois Public Radio and NPR. And at the beginning of this great flood, you had taken some time off from your job at Northern Public Radio in DeKalb. What were you doing?
Well, actually, the very first story I did on this was in East Dubuque, Illinois. That was, we thought at the time, just the spring flood. We covered that. Dubuque, Iowa, being on higher ground, wasn't at risk. But East Dubuque was getting quite a bit of water. Had no idea that this was going to end up being one of the longest and broadest floods we've seen in our history. I had planned on going on vacation the next week. I had this little trip planned to visit courthouses because I'm that much of a geek along the Illinois, the Western Illinois. And it just so happened that, you know, as I was going down, basically I followed the crest all the way down south of St. Louis, Missouri, and just kept filing stories for NPR, for Illinois Public Radio, for my old station. It just happenstance that I was able to do that. Of course, you know, my station was pretty happy about it in the end. But we just didn't know this flood was going to be what it was.
And right.
It was
incredible. And I understand one older man you talked to didn't realize it either and tried to calm you.
Yeah, actually, they were evacuating West Alton, Missouri. This old guy was saying, these newcomers, they're scared of the river. I ain't scared of the river, and I ain't going anywhere. Well, he ended up going somewhere because that town was pretty well inundated by the time it was finished. But there were so many odd stories of watching things like a dog on balanced on an LP tank that was floating down the river. I remember going by one cemetery where the concrete vaults, the boxes that contained the caskets, had popped up out of the ground because there was air in there, and they just were in this soft ground for so long they came up. Lots of different stories like that. But the main thing I remember is, you know, in town after town, whether it was in East Dubuque or whether it was in Quincy, Illinois, or Hannibal, Missouri, or down in St. Louis or Alton, Illinois, or in Chester, everywhere you went, there were huge teams of volunteers and other people trying to make sure that they were filling sandbags, or the Red Cross was out everywhere trying to feed volunteers. And there was a real volunteer effort that you just didn't see on that scale prior to that.
Right. Lester, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's a huge part of this story in a time when we didn't have the preparedness for such events that we have today in our post-9/11 war world. Let's go to our phones. We're asking you for your most vivid memory if you experienced the flood of 93. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Mike. Mike and Tama, take us back 20 years by your side. What are we experiencing?
I went through, you know, what everyone else went through. You know, no water, getting the water from the National Guard. But one of the things I remember was I was watching a news broadcast by one of the local TV stations, and they were flying over the city of Des Moines showing some of the flooding that had taken place. And they come across a guy who was, the water was flowing down the street at such a rapid rate. He was on a boogie board on his knees, boogie boarding in the flood water.
Boogie board like a small surfboard.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just remember thinking, "Wow, who is this guy, and who would risk that?" You know, it was just such a crazy, crazy time, I guess, for everybody.
Mike, thanks for that image from Tama. 1-866-780-9100. Craig in Cedar Rapids, what do you remember from 20 years ago in the Great Flood of 93?
Well, it was 1 foot from coming over the west side dike on the Cedar River, and my house was only one block from that river. And it made me and possibly a lot of people in the city complacent when the 2008 flood started to develop. And I ended up with 11 feet of water in my house. And so it's just amazing how, at least the way I think about things, I try to think positive, and it was detrimental to preparing for what was happening for 2008, because it was so bad in 93, it couldn't get any worse, but it did.
Craig, thank you for that from Cedar Rapids.
Ben,
if I can
interject, this is Lester. That's one of the things, one of the lessons we should have learned from 93 is that reliance on levees and dikes and so forth really is not a very wise move on our part. While most of the federal levies did hold up, a lot of agricultural levies and township and county levies failed, and places were flooded. We should have learned a lesson there, and we really haven't. We just decided we can still tame the river, and I'm not sure that that's possible if you talk to an engineer, frankly.
Bill Stoll, let me hear your lessons learned, because at the time you were working for Iowa Power as a human resource manager, now CEO and general manager of Des Moines Water Works. How do you feel we are in terms of your area and infrastructure compared to 93?
You know, I want to go back to the point that the caller just made about lessons not learned. 1993 was primarily a Des Moines or Central Iowa event. 2008 was certainly an Eastern Iowa, Cedar Rapids event. Part of the reason was because we spent a lot of money here, about $100 million post-93 in the Des Moines area to build flood protection. You know, a great point can be made that improved levee systems, is that really the best way of managing future flood risk, or do you better manage land uses and move development away from floodplains? You know, pretty challenging in a city like the one that we're sitting in now, Des Moines, a city that was incidentally founded by the U.S. Army with a fort at the confluence of the Des Moines and Raccoon Rivers. The natural tendency, whether you're in Cedar Rapids or Des Moines or Davenport or Dubuque, you name a river city in this state, and there are a lot of them, is to settle and settle near them. And so we have a lot of economic development that comes on the basis of location close to rivers, and rivers in this state have a tendency to flood. We learn lessons. We build more infrastructure, but one of the very humbling realizations that we have to come full circle toward is that we can never build enough protection for the next worst event. It's out there waiting. And even in the couple events that we've talked about here in the last two or three minutes, that's 93 and 2008, those events saw the two largest cities in this state essentially losing their economies for a period of time. Between Des Moines in 93 and Cedar Rapids in 2008, and should be a reminder to all of us that there's a vulnerability out there that's very real, and issues like climate change or climate extremes are really part of a larger consideration that ties not only our economic well-being as a state to, but often our physical safety, because boogie boarding down a Des Moines street during a high flow event is not exactly the smartest use of your time and personal safety.
Bill Stowe of the Des Moines Water Works, running out of time this hour. Let's get some more remembrances from some of our listeners. Perry is calling in. What is your memory of that time?
Yes, good day. I was a flight attendant for America West Airlines during that period of time, and we had departed out of New York City, and we were flying across the Midwest, and all the passengers were just chit-chatting, and then all of a sudden, as they began to come across the Midwest floods, it just went deathly silent, and for about 2 hours, we were just amazed at what we were looking at from like 30,000 feet. Mm. And
Everyone crowded around those windows to the extent you can. Describe what you saw below you.
It's like a massive lake that just went on for state after state after state. And it was really, I grew up in the Midwest, so it was gut-wrenching.
Mm. I can hear it in your voice, Perry. Thank you for giving us that image as we remember 20 years ago, the great flood in the Midwest. Miguel is with us in Des Moines. Miguel, what is your memory 20 years ago?
Yeah, my memory was as a 13-year-old waiting for my dad, who worked for Norfolk Southern Railroad and the railroad tracks, which are no longer on the south side of Des Moines anymore, but he had to go down to St. Louis to help the railroad down there. And they called him and said, Jose, you better get back to Des Moines because Des Moines is going to get flooded. And I knew my dad was coming back, and I was trying to stay up and wait for him. Well, I fell asleep, and I woke to a bunch of water running early in that. It would have been Sunday morning, I guess, I think. And it was my mom saying, we got to get as much water as we can because there's going to be no more water. And I was like, as a 13-year-old, like, I hear the water running. But we were trying to save as much as we could so we could use it to flush and all that. And it's just a really fond memory of my dad.
Okay, Miguel from Des Moines, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I wish our program lasted longer. We have a lot of people who want to chip in other memories, but we have just a very short time left. Dean Borg, when we talked before this program, the ironic thing, the lesson that you learned had to do with the fact that we had so much water all over the Midwest, and yet clean drinking water was at a premium.
It was a near panic, Ben, and I'll do it quickly because I know you're nearly out of time. I checked later into the Ramada Inn, coming back down again for Iowa Public Television specials on the flood with the Army National Guard, and Bill Stowe was on that program too. I checked into the Ramada Inn, and they were given at check-in 2 bottles of bottled water, and I had to sign a waiver agreeing to be evicted if I used the bathroom facilities. I had to use a porta-potty outside, and you would be evicted if you tried to use the bathroom. Later on, checking in a later visit, I had to go west on I-80 to the Marriott out there, which had water, and I called my relatives who lived in Urbandale and without water and said, come out and take showers.
You did, and they came out because they were – Bill Stowe, what did that once things had finally settled down, what did that first shower or settling down feel like to you?
Oh, it felt like nothing I'd ever experienced before, I'm sure.
It was a very hot summer, wasn't it?
You know, it was a miserably hot summer, and it's hard for us 20 years later to sit in this July and August weather and really appreciate how hot it was without air conditioning, without running water, and to be able to appreciate the – creature comforts that we lost in that process. But I really appreciated Miguel's reference to everybody trying to fill their bathtubs at the last minute so we had just a little water to be able to dip into. That is a great remembrance from 1993 and a great remembrance in my business, in the water business, mm-hmm. of how we can take for granted such an important commodity.
Bill Stowe, CEO and General Manager of Des Moines Water Works, thank you for being with us in our Des Moines studio. Dean Borg, of course, thanks to you. Lester Graham, thanks for checking in from Michigan with your remembrances along the Mississippi. We appreciate it, and especially that image of the dog that floated on the empty propane tank. The dog was okay, wasn't he?
A boater went out and got him.
Oh, good to know. Happy end of the story for the dog. Thank you all for chipping in, and thanks to our listeners for chipping in their memories. River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Also, a big thanks to Charity Nebbe for helping out with the Dan Murphy interview earlier this hour. Technical support from Dennis Reese in Cedar Falls, help from Tony Daner, and Rob Dillard in Des Moines. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Thanks for joining us.